space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Well, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This... It's truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott!
What the hell is a gigawatt?
How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. That says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.chazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. And if you scroll down underneath all the four chat rooms that's in the super chat room, you'll find a link for People Radio. Go over there and say hi to them. Tell them old crazy here Shazia sent you. Wonderful folks over there. So basically I'm going to be beginning a huge social experiment to see whether or not I can get people on board with a project that I've been thinking about for quite some time, which essentially because of You know, out there in this world, they say that the world's trash crisis, and that basically, you know, every nation out there has tons and tons of trash that they generate. Like, you know, let's say metric ton wise, let's say Germany basically produces about approximately 127,816 metric tons. Japan, 144,466 metric tons. China, 520,548. Brazil, 149,096. United States, 624,700 tons per day. That's a lot of trash, folks. Now, I got this crazy idea that we could actually fund all the research necessary for making this world a better place with your trash. Now, before you think I'm all crazy and shut off the radio because you don't want to hear somebody talking trash on the world, then, you know, just hear me out. You know, there's all kinds of things out there in this world that could actually be recycled. But, you know, you ever wondered where does that recycled materials go once it gets to the recycling plant? And why isn't it not done on a full scale as opposed to just a very small scale? You know, if you look on a lot of your plastics and bottles and stuff like that, you'll see a little symbol that shows that it was made with recycled material. So, you know, it's not like it can't be done. It can be done. There's actually some folks over in Europe, I believe it was, that basically figured out with the right temperatures you could make plastic bottles into petrol, gasoline. Well, it's all made from basic elements of crude oil anyway. So the oil industry, they make a lot of money making a lot of plastics and rubbers and all kinds of different stuff like that, materials that you use on your automobile and in daily life. Look at all your different computers that have plastic in them, a lot of appliances, just about, there's plastic everywhere. And all that is recyclable material. Glass, aluminum, however you want to say it. Just about it. I keep saying just about, but every single thing out there is recyclable. It doesn't matter whether it's old batteries or whatever, you know. And see, here we are, we the people of the world out here, we see that there's seemed to be an environmental crisis going on, and we're always looking for a solution, and one person by themselves is never going to be the solution. It's going to take something that where people really care enough about the world and the environment in order to actually do something. But this social experiment that I'm talking about doing basically is going to see how far you can push the line of how far the people will actually take the effort to actually doing some recycling. You know, I want to basically put up some flyers and post some posts out there on the internet and show people different recycling centers to where, you know, maybe we could start an account, and when people actually take it there, whatever is financially valuable as far as maybe aluminum cans or something like that, or any of the materials that they might throw a few pennies in the bucket for you bringing them in, then we could throw that all into an account and basically have a committee to decide where the research funds go from that point on. So I might need a little bit of help on this. I might need to find a group of people who would be interested in helping me to organize a deal. But even in the meantime, I'm gonna, on a small scale, I've been collecting bottle caps, plastic bottle caps, because I've watched a YouTube video where, you know, there's like quite a lot of videos out there where these, because of the temperature range, that you can actually melt these things down and then remold the plastic. They were making things like slingshots and stuff out of them, just making plastic, melting it into, you know, solid panels where you could actually cut out different products or whatever. And also, I had worked in a plastic plant prior in my life, and I seen how injection molding machines function, and got a good idea about ways to grind the material down into smaller pellets to where these machines could actually melt the plastic down and reuse it and stuff. And it's not just plastic. Like I said, there's glass and all that kind of stuff. There's ways that you can take and turn all of the things that people throw away into useful products again. And you think about if people actually did do this, you know, in their communities, they instead of having a city dump, you would have a city recycling center to where these things actually, you know, get used. Now, and I'm not saying that there aren't already recycling facilities available out there. I know there are, but it doesn't seem like it's something that's on a large scale. And, you know, part of the problem out there that people have talked about was there's actually a floating island of trash, plastic that, you know, is out in the ocean. Well, some of which I could say, you know, might have came from people just being careless and throwing it overboard. Others, you know, from weather events such as tsunamis and floods and stuff like that washed it down the river and so on. But nonetheless, even that trash out there could actually be recycled if people wanted to take the time to do it. Now, well, there's a lot of people that talk about being environmentalists and caring about the world, and maybe they actually go out their comfort zone and work really hard to try to recycle, but I would say that the problem is so large that most people, you know, they might have energy enough for a little while, but then they might just get burned out because, you know, no matter how hard you work, you just really don't see any results in the world. And that's kind of sad because we actually have a wonderful world if we just choose to use it properly. So, you know, nations around the globe observe Earth Day. And you go look at these, I'm going to post this link from, let me see here. It's actually Los Angeles Times link, but, you know, whatever you like about them or don't like about them, it's not the issue. It's what I'm talking about, the subject there about recycling. It just look at the photos in there and see how many pile, how huge those piles of garbage are. Even food waste could be recycled. There's so many different ideas and methods. If we had a committee that would be interested in sitting down and discussing all kinds of ideas to take you know, bits and pieces of trash and just sitting around troubleshooting, thinking about what could you make with this? What could you make useful with it, you know? Plastic, there's so many uses for plastic, it's insane, you know, there's all kinds of, look at your fly swatter, everybody hates flies buzzing around their food, and so, you know, you can make fly swatters or door stops or slingshots like the kid made with the bottle caps that he melted down. And one of the things about the plastics is, you know, some of them's already got colors in them. So if you had a specific item that you wanted a specific color, it wouldn't be that big of a deal to just separate all your plastics in different colors and melt them down and use them that way. Anyway, I want to see whether or not it would be possible to fund alternative energy research with trash. You know, including my own trash. But in order to get this thing started, I'm going to start off in my local area, you know, because you think about if I ask somebody to, you know, collect up, you know, plastic bottle lids and then mail them to me, I might be sitting on a mountain of packages that need to be opened up with, with you know, more paper trash is generated. Well, I guess, you know, in reality, there's a, hey, you save the package that it comes in too, and there you go. You got fuel for the fire to melt the plastic, so to speak. Anyway, I want to try to find the most brilliant way in order to recycle all these different materials so that if you get a good system down, you can show the world how it's done. And if, you know, It's something that I believe could actually benefit the world by, you know, all the alternative energy research that I do. Actually, I use recycled wire and recycled appliances and salvaged parts and stuff like that to put things together. But I actually want to build a building. You know, I want to build a facility that will be basically made out of trash. You know, using the materials that would have otherwise gone into a landfill to be recycled into, you know, everything from beams to make like a dome structure or something like that, and make it to where it's actually built to last. Where it looks, it doesn't look like trash. When you look at it, you would think it was, you know, something that was built by a professional construction company, so to speak. But starting off with something small, these a lot of plastics can be, you know, melted down and extruded and made into materials that 3D printers can actually use. So that's also technology that is already available that I want to be looking into as well. There are some newer style 3D printers that use types of resins that they're pretty impressive how well these things print out. I actually got a sample from one company sent to me. It's a little statue head, but it's pretty neat. It's got good weight to it and looks like quality material. And so with that said, I want to look into the 3D printing portion of it and see whether or not I can actually buy me a 3D printer with recycled materials, that things that would have otherwise gone to the dump. And so if you talk to your neighbors and you tell them, look, you know, maybe you ain't got a lot of time to go out recycling or anything, but before you throw it in the trash, would you be willing to donate it to, you know, the cause of, you know, basically recycling for science, you know, using that to fund research into all kinds of alternative energy. See, I honestly believe that I've got the alternative energy thing solved. Now, the question of putting the information out there for everyone, basically people want to see some sort of working device that they can, you know, either replicate or measure or whatever like that. Now, all the concepts and the theory, you know, we're past theory now. It's all in the factual science. It's proven science, things they keep talking about here on Mad Science Show about different ways to use energy. And so with that said, if you actually take the funds generated from basically selling people's trash that they were going to throw away anyway and put it into building working devices that you could actually put out there for the people as well, you solve a lot of problems. And in the process of solving what to do with people's trash, you could also find new solutions for, you know, how to properly dispose of things. I got one of my computer hard drives down here clicking, so if you hear that in the background, I hope my hard drive ain't getting ready to conk out on me. That wouldn't be good. Anyway, I don't even know which one it is. I think it's this HP down there that's clicking. Don't worry, though. If it falls apart, I'll either fix it or I'll recycle it. So, that's my plan, is to start off trying to, in my neighborhood, I'm going to put some flyers up and, try to put some, basically some get-togethers at local community halls and stuff like that, and talk to people about this and see if I can actually build a team of people who would be interested in this kind of endeavor to do research. So if there's anyone out there who feels like they want to call in and talk about this, that would be wonderful. That doggone hard drive is distracting me. Let me get a drink of my coffee. But, you know, hey, it's all duct tape and baling wire here at ShazizRadio.com. You know, it's like a lot of lists out there, the top five household items that can be recycled. Paper, plastic, glass, metals, and it even shows hazardous materials like things like batteries and spray cans and paint thinners and light bulbs and household cleaners and automotive fluids and called by a recycle button need. I was just reading a footnote on that one. Anyway, nobody really thinks about it. Seriously, when you go out and change the oil in your car, whatever happens to that old oil? You know, there are some people who have gotten smart and they'll go around to old auto shops because they got to pay to get rid of dirty oil or even antifreeze or stuff like that, and they'll collect it up. And you can take all these materials that you know are dirty. And they can be refiltered, you know, process of heating them up and filtration. You can filter out, if you got a 50-gallon drum of motor oil, you can filter that motor oil out to where it's just as clean or cleaner than it was when you first got it. And it can be reused. Some people turn it into biodiesels and, different waste oil burners will actually use this fuel as well. See, inside that, the reason why that all that oil is getting black to begin with is because the internal combustion engine has carbon blow-by. So carbon is a fuel. And a lot of people don't realize that. You know, even though it looks all cruddy, it's still valuable. It's still a usable product. Even after your car shouldn't be running it because that carbon will actually act like sandpaper on your bearings and your pistons and stuff like that, it is still reusable. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this pile of trash that people are standing on. There's a couple bulldozers up there, big old tracks, metal tracks on them, just driving across this mountain of trash, shoving stuff around in a landfill. And it's really quite ridiculous how much money is actually in that pile of trash. You know, a lot of people say, they make excuses and say, well, you know, it costs too much money to recycle this, and so, you know, that's not worth it. It's cheaper to buy new and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know, for that type of mentality, I guess the world's pretty much screwed, because if that's what you think, then we're just going to keep on getting landfills. But you look at all this stuff, and even in this pile, everything in here, you know, it will recycle back into nature eventually. It'll become what it was before it was ever even made in that pile of trash. But before it ever even hit the trash can, put it in a recycle bin. You know, I want to get some 5-gallon buckets and put a label on there and put them around different places that, you know, stores that might allow me to put it, just inside the door where people can see it, and put on their bottle caps for science research. Help me make the world a better place, you know. I believe that if I did that and made a specific time and I go around and pick them up, I might be surprised there might not be one single bottle cap, or maybe two or three in each one of them. So that's why I said that this potentially a social experiment, because whether or not people would actually take the time to go out of their comfort zone and do something, you know, that's the question. Stephen Gibbons in a chat room says, ticking time bomb hard drive, it may be virus, do not boot time scan and bad up backup data, bro, just in case. Yeah, well, this particular one that's making all the racket on, I ain't really got any good stuff on it. I just use that one there for Skype, so if it dies, then I'll just throw another one. I've got tons of computers around here I can throw up in there. They're all old. They're all recycled. Everything, I think the oldest computer I got a Windows 10, I think, but they go back XP all the way back to 95 and Windows 98 and all those old programs. So, yep, I always got to back up my data, that's for sure. Really, the only one I really worry about is the one that actually has Sam Broadcaster on, but I've got those those all backed up, and it's time for a new backup of the backup. So we'll get it worked out. Anyway, so the whole idea of this social experiment is to see how far that I can take it. To see how far I can take the concept of taking... My grandfather used to say one man's junk is another man's treasure, you know? Turning trash into treasure. All these materials that basically go in the trash can could be literally, quite literally, recycled. And so... You imagine if there's a useful purpose for it, or even if it's a case of we start this program up, and instead of the research going to old crazy haired Chaziz, the funds out of the research, you could designate who you want, what researcher, find your favorite researcher, and a lot of these you could actually find on Chaziz Radio on Steven's resource page, because he's put together a link. If you scroll up above the chat room in the superchat.html and you click on the button that says, it's right above the radio player, it says Steven's resource page, and he's got a whole bunch of links of alternative energy researchers. And so we could fix it up so that maybe you could guide the funds to your favorite researcher like Russ at RWG Research, or anybody that... you think is actually doing work that might one day benefit, the world in, alternative energy or alternative medicines or whatever. So, basically, I'm going to start off in my own community and go down the hardware store, buy me some plastic buckets, decorate them up, and go around to a few different places where, they sell soda or whatever, and mention to the employees or the managers or whatever, and see if I can get permission to set these out there. And if people want to try to help fund the research, when they get done with their soda bottles or whatever, they'll throw the cap in the little bucket and see how many I can gather up. I've got quite a few that I've had my family gathering up, and I'm going to use these to try to make useful products. And that's the whole deal. Whatever is recycled, whether it be old refrigerators, washing machines, all this kind of stuff, a lot of this could, you could take out usable parts, like, for example, in microwave ovens, magnets, and stuff like that, you could recycle out of, and, different little, other items inside there. There are thermal switches in microwave ovens that could be recycled, and take all these good parts out of them, and then the actual rest of the deal could be separated in its components and actually recycled out as well. I know that, and it's not too far from me, there are metal recycling places where you can take metals and, by whatever weight they are, you can get some funds off of there. But then take these funds and funnel them right directly into research of what you can do with trash. Plastics, papers, mylars, anything that people normally throw away in the trash can that could actually be, remolded or repurposed into another usable product. And so basically I put on there funding research with your trash ? What I'd like to know from people listening to me, you can send me an email at shaziz@yahoo.com or throw a notice in the chat room. How many people out there would actually support me in an endeavor like that? Basically funding all my research from this point on with trash. The trash that you've got to throw away anyway. let me know about that, whether or not you would support me in an endeavor like that. I'm always saying I don't want to put donation buttons and ask people for money for research. That's not me. I want to solve a problem and create a solution that's going to be, it's a two for one kind of thing. Like, I need funds to do my research, and in order to do my research, I solved the problem by using what would have otherwise been trash to generate the funds for my research, if that makes any sense to you. And so, if you're listening in, and you like that, just type in the message, you support, funding research with trash. And, I want to try to put a notice out on Facebook and see how many people would actually, support me in that effort. If I could actually make the world a better place, at least a little piece of the world a better place, by generating revenue and products utilizing what other people would have otherwise thrown away, so that I could set an example to show people of what you can do with your trash. I don't want everybody coming by to my house and throwing their trash bags out on my front lawn or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that if I could show you a process by which whenever you get ready to throw something away, you actually can get something in return out of it. Like, for example, there's a lot of people out there that like to tinker and make all kinds of nifty gizmos. Imagine if we made a nifty gizmo that would take any bottle cap and take that bottle cap, stick it in the machine, and it would melt it up and put it into maybe like making a little marble or something like that, a little plastic marble. So, I've seen a lot of different things out there at like fairs and stuff like that where you can actually put, it's not actually recycling too extreme, but the gizmo, you get the point, is that you put a penny or something in there and you run the machine around and it makes this nifty little token. I got one on my keychain that's got a Roadrunner on it that are made out of a penny. But people that can engineer and create ideas like that would be perfect to gather into building ideas for what you could actually use these parts for. Like maybe 10 plastic bottle caps of any color, all just kind of mixed up and together, melted down and poured into a crude mold, would make a door wedge that whenever you want to keep your door open when you're doing something, then you would have a useful product out of, that particular deal. Let's see. Steven said, I would love to give you my trash as is, but shipping turtle take your trash to Shaziz. Oh, he's talking about the shipping wise, and he's telling Patty to bring her trash as well. Now, once again, I don't want a landfill in my yard, but I do want to try to gather up useful products like that. I got a little drawer that I've actually had my kids saving bottle caps, plastic bottle caps. And I'm going to melt them down and make products with them and see if I can regrind some of them and extrude it into the material used for a 3D printer and try it out. I want to see how far that I can actually take them bottle caps. And actually, in my own home, I've watched that the kids are saving them to some extent, but not as much. It's something that it's a mentality to where people are used to throwing things away. They're used to it not necessarily having any kind of value or worth to it. So a lot of times I'll see it in the trash, and I'll unscrew the bottle cap and keep the bottle. I'd like to get it to the point where I could actually recycle the entire bottle. Every bit of what would have normally otherwise been trash. They go out to the burn pile out here because we don't have trash pickup where I'm at. I'm out in the sticks, but every bit of whatever trash out here could be recycled, and you wouldn't even have a burn pile or a burn barrel. There was actually one smart individual that I met one time that sold the 50-gallon drums to people for a burn pile, for a burn barrel. And he advertised that he'd take away your old burn barrel from you. If you didn't mind, he'd bring you a new burn barrel and take away your old one. Because after a while, when you burn in the barrels, they get filled all up with ash and stuff like that. And I was just curious, what the heck would the guy want somebody's burn barrel for? Why would he want your burnt trash? Well, the wisdom of what he was doing was that when you put like aluminum cans and aluminum foil and all that stuff, and over the years of burning it, you get these little nuggets of aluminum that fall down to the bottom, and he could separate that and put the aluminum into a pile and gather it up, and then basically when he gets enough of it, turn around and sell it. So he was selling you the can to burn your trash, then he was selling your trash. That's what I'm talking about. You know, there are recycling places that used to be like city dumps where people actually had huge programs to recycle trash. But according to the figures that I've seen here on the Los Angeles Times of how much trash and the photos to match, there's a bunch of people digging in the trash over there. They're looking for recyclables. It's amazing. You know, I mean, I feel bad that there are people that are, financially not stable to, I gotta go dig in the trash to find recyclables to make some money, you know. Because there's probably a lot of hazards in the way that these are all piled into the landfills. Who knows what's in that trash? Might be, drug needles or old hypodermics that, got disposed into the trash. And even all of those could be recycled, but they need to be done, responsibly and safely. I don't know why people would throw any needles into the trash can, knowing that it could end up anywhere in this world, And we don't want anybody getting hurt or sick or anything like that. And so, if you had a method by which you could put these into a machine and basically make them safe, melt the plastic off, grind the metals down, and basically separate the two. Using science, there are solutions where you could actually, if you really, really wanted to engineer it, you could engineer a piece of machinery that would literally take an entire bag of mixed trash, grind it down, separate it into its different components, and put them into different containers, so that this stuff is already ready to recycle, and you just take it right up to the recycling when it gets full and then put your new container on there. I guess that wasn't a message for me. Alright, so, if anybody wants to join me, I could probably use some help on this subject, so I look over here in the mad science, Skype chat and see if anybody throws in a thumbs up. I'll add them to a call. But I'm going to try this as a social experiment and see how far that I could actually take it, how many people would actually be interested in helping me out with this, this endeavor. And, I didn't see that down there. Hi, Scottish Sovereign down there in the TCT side of the chat room. There we go, let's click that over there. I'll be able to see all four of them at the same time. That's why I run multiple computers, so I don't miss the comments in the chat rooms. And I'm also trying to watch over on Skype as well. So that's another reason why it's always good to have an extra person on the Mad Science Show, because, it gives you a chance and maybe they'll see something you don't. Because I want to answer everybody's questions if somebody got an idea or something to share as well. But if you support the idea of me going forward with this social experiment, to fund research with trash, let me know about that. You know, I've always said, and I pointed out to everybody, I will not ask for donations on this this radio network. I won't do it, you know. And I advertise that I'm going to prove free energy once and for all, beyond a shadow of a doubt. I meant it. That means that the information, the plans of any device that's put together, it's going to be for free. When I said free energy, I meant it. And, you know, basically the world out there, all the world of debunkers out there that say there ain't no such thing as free energy is because they didn't pay attention in science class. And, you know, so with that said, I want to take this to the extreme. No ifs, ands, or buts. I already feel like I've more than proved energy is free. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Now it's just a matter of putting a device together that's going to basically, at the very least, supplement somebody's electric use so that they don't have to pay near the bill, and showing them other ways by which you can run the same appliance on a less amount of energy input. Because these machines that we use are fan motors and appliances. They don't need as much energy that we're using in order to run. We waste so much energy, it's crazy. And I've talked about this so many times. And, you know, those electric motors, they don't care where the magnetic field came from. They don't care whether it came from, you know, a permanent magnet source or whether it was a pulse DC magnetic field created. And so, you know, they will run on a lot less than what they've been doing. I'm just trying to read a comment. Sorry about that. Alright, so, anyway. Comment wasn't for me, I guess. But, that's the plan, folks. I need to generate funds to help me maintain this situation. This radio network and the research that I want to do. I need to generate funds, but I want to be creative about it. I don't want to say, hey, you know, look, I need money. Everybody needs money. You know, and it's just, that's not the way I want this to play out. I want to be able to show people, if I can do this on a small scale, imagine what we could do on a large scale. If everybody knew that each one of these items that they were getting ready to throw in the trash had a useful purpose, it could generate a lot of work for people. It could generate a lot of jobs in manufacturing and stuff. Because if everything that you were getting ready to throw away, there was actually a machine that you could drop this specific item into, and you put it in there, it does its job and turns around and pops out a useful product in the process. Hope you see what it is I'm saying. And so, trash compactors that you put in your house, and if you knew, hey, you put plastic in this side and you put metal in that side, and if somehow, for some reason, you accidentally put the wrong material in the wrong one, it would hurt it. It just spit it back out the other side into the right portion of the deal. I'm telling you, there is nothing, no idea out there that you can't come up with that there can't be something engineered to do exactly what I'm saying. See, all these different materials have different weights. They have different qualities. Some are non-magnetic. Some are able to be attracted by static electricity. Some are magnetic. And so, you could design a system. Looks like somebody in the Knights of Round Table. Give me about 10 minutes, Chaz, and I will join you. Cool, Patty. Yay. Okay, I'll get her ready. As soon as 10 minutes shows up, hopefully I didn't miss the 10 minute mark. Just throw a thumb up in there when you're ready, and I'll throw you in here. throw you in there. Bring you in softly. That sounds rude. Let's throw somebody in a conversation. Anyway, there's all kinds of ideas that are different types of machines, and including glass. I mean, there's a lot of ideas that I have for like landscaping with what would have used to be the old broken bottles. You know, we don't want anybody getting cut, but you could take these, take all that glass and put it into a machine that would grind it down and then melt it up and basically turn it into a glass block, you know, like Legos. And you could use these for all kinds of cool landscaping, and the multi swirls of different colors would be cool. Or you could put in, you know, specific colors and get whatever color you wanted out of it. If there were enough ideas out there of what you could do with materials that are, that things are already made out of, because they're perfect, you know, already out of the gate. You know, some people say they don't want you to recycle egg cartons, polystyrene, foam cups and containers. There's actually a list out there what not to recycle, which is ridiculous. It says don't recycle, and it shows egg cartons and pizza boxes and things that have had food in them, like McDonald's trash, which is ridiculous, you know, because even in that process of recycling that, they're talking about impurities, you know. If you're not going to be able to make this to where it's something that you can actually reuse for food purposes, it could be reused for material purposes. And things like biofuels, you know, there's grease involved on this deal right here. And so you can separate all the components, and no matter how small of amount there may be in one, imagine if you're generating tons and tons of McDonald's trash. Next thing you know, you got a bucket of French fry oil, you know, that can be turned into biofuel. And let's see, Barbara said over there in the Knights of the Round Table, Swedes have done so much good job of recycling, there is no longer enough trash to meet their heating plant needs. See? That's, and if you don't want your trash, there's somebody out there could probably use it. You know, that's the thing. This is why I get so crazy about stuff, is because all the garbage that's just wasted, it's not really garbage. The thing about nature is nature recycles everything. It don't matter what it is. Nature will recycle it. Even you. You know, everything, you know, I hear all these doom and gloom things about, well, people saying, well, if you put this trash, you know, in the landfill, it takes hundreds of thousands of years in order to, for nature to break it down. That's not true. That's simply not true. The science doesn't back it up, because plastic over a couple of years will deteriorate into nothing if ain't nothing done with it. So, whatever nature, every one of these products came out of nature. I don't even care if you're even just talking polystyrene, even that came out of nature. There ain't a single chemical that we've ever put together that nature can't tear apart. Nature will recycle everything. You know, using techniques from the sun, you know, from different, like UV rays. If you take a look at some of these, like, old plastic barrels that set out in the weather, they've been heated up and cooled down and heated up and cooled down. And the sun has basically bleached the colors out of them. These things will become brittle after a while. And basically, you smack them on and they'll fall apart. So, that's a big piece of plastic. Why didn't it last thousands of years? You know, under the right condition, there are materials that would probably last thousands of years. But nonetheless, it's still going to get recycled, no matter what. So anyway, Barbara also threw a link in the Knights of the Round Table for Dirty Power Sweden wants you. I'll just throw the link over in the chat room if I can get it, unless you can go ahead and do that for me. All right, so you know, we go out, we dig up, you know, coal out of the ground, and we pump oil out of it, natural gases, and all this kind of stuff, and we cut down trees for paper, and do all this stuff, and everything is basically using up what the environment has to offer, which, you know, I'm not really concerned about as far as, you know, we're not going to run out of it. Nature, whatever you're not using, we'll put it back. It's plain and simple. There's not going to be any shortage of paper, you know, ever. If you cut down every single tree on the planet, you're not going to have no shade, and there's going to be issues, but, you know, nature's going to put those trees back. But if you're really seriously concerned about the trees, then there are things that you could actually do, such as going out planting another tree, or, you know, recycling that paper to the extent where you don't have to go out and cut trees down. Oh, it just goes on and on. Recycling's been one of the things. It's been one of the things that drives me insane forever and a day. I mean, if you look out there in this trash pile that is on that in those pictures, I can pick out all kinds of stuff right there that could be repurposed, recycled. You know, there's even places out there where they take and make trash cans out of trash. They take the recycled plastic, mold it into trash cans. Then the trash gets back into the dump again. So we're wasting a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff is getting wasted. Yeah, whether it be old electrical appliances or something, you know, there's actually gold, silver, copper, brass. Barbara, I think it was, just threw another link in there. You want to join me, lady? I'm just going to have to reach down here and throw somebody up in the chat room. So he sent a message. Send an instant message. What? To join. Alright, so maybe I'll have a couple people in here to help me so I'm not sitting here rambling and all that kind of stuff. Do-do-do-do. Alright, sorry about that, folks. This makes terrible radio. Alright, there we go. I'm just going to try it. Hi, lady.
Yeah. Hey there.
You're live on the air.
Oh, live on the air. Hey, everybody. This is Trash Day.
Yeah. We're talking trash today.
I'm a trash talker myself. Sometimes, not always.
Anyway, I didn't get the message whether you wanted to join or not. I wasn't sure. I seen an okay in there, so I just threw you in there anyway. So what's the worst case scenario? You get mad and hang up on me?
I could get mad.
Yeah.
Or I could talk trash to you.
Yeah. Well,
let's talk trash.
I got this crazy idea. I don't want to ask people for donations for helping funding research, but what a better way to actually fund research but to use trash that people would otherwise throw away. And so I got tons of ideas on this thing, and What my plan is, you know, I'm not asking everybody out there listening in to, you know, drive by Osha Ziz's house and throw your trash out in my yard.
Better watch out. People may misunderstand.
Yeah, I'm not
looking. Oh, there's some guy who wants our trash, Dad. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm not looking. Hey, cool. Holy Walker wants to join in.
All right. I bet he's got some trash.
Cool. Anyway, so don't drive past old Shaziz's house and throw your trash in my yard. I don't want to live in a landfill. I want to do this responsibly. Did you hear I said responsibly?
What does that mean? There's a lot of irresponsible people these days.
Well, yeah, you know, there's people that drive down the road, and because they don't want no trash in their car, I mean, they want their car to be clean, so they'll chuck it out the window.
We've had that happen here on our land, waking up in the morning and find somebody's old couch or air conditioner that no longer works. And last year, there was a bunch of police cars racing by here and all kinds of things going on. And up the road, somebody had dropped about 12 bags of trash.
Wow.
Well, somebody went through, the neighbor up there went through the trash bags and found the identity of the person who dumped the trash. And the guy, I guess they did, you know, I hope they did something about it, but the police were there looking at all the stuff, and they had to have a big machine, one of those things that you lift up stuff with, and trucks came and to carry it away.
Well, if you're going to throw your trash out in somebody's yard, make sure your name ain't on it.
Yes.
They probably would have saved themselves a huge fine, because most places like $3,000 and up, anywhere from $500 and up, fines for littering. And so instead of throwing your trash, you could take it to the recycle place, and you would have saved yourself a lot of money by doing so.
Yeah, it really annoys me when I see people's old furniture dumped along a nice, pristine, pond side of a pond, I don't know. I just don't understand.
Well, I don't either.
I guess people, like you say, you know, if you do have to pay per bag, I suppose, but there are, you know, you talk about responsibility, right? Let's be responsible. Why dump it on somebody else's property? Then they have to take it, and they have to pay to have it, you know, taken to the dump. Or it's no longer called a dump. What is it called now?
That landfill.
Well, landfill.
I would like to start a facility that would give people the option to actually, you know, instead of throwing their trash, out on the curb for the, the trash man to take to a landfill, that they could actually bring it to this facility and have it, you know, completely recycled. Because I'm saying that every single thing that goes in the trash, and don't matter whether or not you believe it's, got toxic materials in it or whatever, there is nothing that is thrown in the trash that cannot be recycled. There is no product that has ever been made that cannot be recycled. And using all of the science that I've learned from nature, and believe me, nature is the best teacher of science.
Hey, Patty's giving you a hand signal.
Okay, let's throw her in there too. I got to find her now. Yeah.
Well, come on out, Patty.
Anyway,
come out.
Anyway, Holy Walker. Hey, are you in there?
Hi, Holy Walker.
I'm gonna find you, Patty.
Maybe they're in the trash pile looking for stuff.
Well, you
some
know,
good stuff.
Grandpa said one man's trash is another man's treasure, so...
Well, I wrote that up there on the chat, and I used to go to our local landfill, rooting around. A lot of people did. Well, I found some treasures in there. I tell you, boy, it was wonderful, and a lot of people went there and found stuff and resold it. Then they put a ban on people going through the trash, and that was the end of that.
Well, that's another crazy thing right there that drives me nuts. Do you know they put locks on dumpsters now because they're so worried you might sue them. You get hurt and sue them digging in their trash. Ain't
yeah,
that crazy?
Or you might find something to eat. you might be hungry. you need food. That's not funny, but...
I wish that somehow, some way that I could get myself in front of the Congress or the Senate and all them and just ream them about our trash. I'd do it. I'd say, look, y'all sitting around talking about how we got to find solutions for everything from, global warming to climate change to trash crises and fuel energy crises. And I'm sitting here telling you, you've got every single solution to every single problem that you've been whining about all these years, but you don't never take the initiative to make things happen.
I mean, well, look at what Sweden is doing in Denmark, and like I put that link in there. They're using, they need trash. They're so good at recycling that they now need trash for their energy, for the energy factories or whatever they're doing with it. I didn't go into the article, but it's kind of very fascinating to me. They're actually asking for tons of trash from the whole world.
Well, see, now everybody could. There's Sweden's a great place to start then, as far as the information on how they did it. Now I know,
yep.
I know that they're. Did you say something there, Holy Walker? How you doing?
Hey, hey.
Hi, Holy
yeah,
Walker.
Hey, I was gonna say you get a high enough temperature, you can turn anything into fuel.
Yeah.
You can plasma, you get something at the plasma temperature. You can turn these plastics and waste materials, even nuclear waste. You can plasma to put it in that plasma state. At the very least, you don't even necessarily have to. Some materials get it that hot to be able to make turn into usable energy. But there's ways, temperature and pressure. There are plenty of technologies already documented, and the information's out there. All you gotta do is get enough people, on the same page to build the machines to do it.
Just like
the Back to Future. You know the example I'm talking about when
Mr. Fusion.
Yeah. Toss whatever in there and it basically has a nuclear type reaction, and he can do it safely, and you got plenty of abundance of energy, all this waste stuff, and then you solve the recycling issue and the waste and toxicity issues instead of having things leaching into the groundwater.
Wow, Holy Walker, hold on a second. You just gave me an incredible idea. You just blew me away. Everybody's looking for this so-called free energy device, right? Well, if you can't find free energy, you're not looking for it. But what you just said about Mr. Fusion, I could build that. I could quite literally take and turn your trash into a power plant for a generating system for your home. I could build that. I could engineer that. That is probably by far the most brilliant idea that I've heard on Mad Science Show yet.
I have a question here. There's producing energy from waste, okay? They say the most common and popular method of waste to energy generation is incineration, which I don't particularly like. Then they have thermal technologies or depolymerization. Then they have gasification, and then they have pyrolysis and plasma arc gasification, and non-thermal technologies, anaerobic digestion, which is a slow process, right?
Yeah, but see, every single one of those processes have all the necessary materials in the trash itself.
Yeah, apparently.
The metals are conductive, all right? The metals are conductive. So if you sent the proper high-frequency wave, you would heat those metals up, which would in turn heat the plastics up, and you could literally, with the plasma technology like Holy Walker mentioned, you could literally turn a high-voltage system into a system that would instantly gasify your trash, run that into a pressure tank that would then, in turn, run any generator.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's frequency. It'd be much more efficient to, energy efficient, at least, to get something generating the right frequency for the, like, say, use titanium. You get a titanium cylinder or whatever type of container and have a circuit that pulses that high voltage frequency, at the right frequency that is that the titanium resonates at, and bam, it wouldn't take much. It wouldn't take much current. A good voltage and a nice high, the right frequency, and you got a very high temperature container that can deal with a lot of materials.
And since you can run frequency on top of frequency side by side without them ever interfering with each other, if you've ever seen the science experiment where you rub your hair on a balloon and you put it next to a stream of water, it will actually attract that water to it. Well, also, there are materials out there such as polystyrene and papers that are, attracted by static electricity as well. So you could combine a high frequency plasma generating system and a, like a Lord Kelvin or Van de Graaff style static electricity or even negative ion generator that would quite literally separate the trash. Bring all the liquids to one side and all the papers to one side and all of this stuff. We have every single technology available to us to quite literally build this machine to separate what you don't want to, melt or what you want to burn into its all its separate components. We could build a compact machine that you could throw your trash in on a daily basis, and when the level gets up to a certain height, the machine will come on. It will instant start turning it into fuel and recyclables right there in your house. What do you think? Anybody?
I think it's fantastic, actually. I think it seems that this is becoming of great interest, It's an emerging, it says an emerging innovative set of technologies, which is basically about sustenance of the environment and with minimum damage, to the ecosystem. So, these are kind of developing all over the world, and China and India are really, aside from Sweden and Denmark and all those, but China and India are really moving ahead with this.
Well, maybe the ones that are already involved in it, first off, it'd be good to see, what their processes were, but maybe some of these ideas, if I could get in contact with a representative from each one of these places, I could throw them ideas hand over fist and the science to back it up so that maybe they would take the idea and run with it. You see what I mean? Because I'm not looking to get rich on this, so I don't need to build a machine and patent it and do anything like that, but I know that I could engineer a machine, not maybe working exactly like Mr. Fusion did in Back to the Future, but I could engineer a machine that would take every bit of trash that you got and recycle it and turn it into useful products and fuel. The materials, the metals and stuff like that, they can obviously be recycled. You can use magnetism to suck all the metals to one side, static to suck all the materials that are, attracted by static electricity to another side, separate any of the liquids, and even some of those liquids could actually be recycled into, fresh water out of one container and other chemicals into another container. I'm telling you, if I'd actually told this to a trash man one time, I said, if you guys were ever interested, and they worked for Waste Management at the time, I said, if you guys were ever interested, I will show you how to engineer a trash truck that will recycle that trash, and by the time you get back to where you're working.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you know anything or Holy Walker knows anything about the anaerobic digestion, the fermentation system. I saw this video a while back about people in your home and in your own yard. You can use this for energy, right?
Yeah, because it'll make stuff like methane by, when the bacteria and stuff and things are rotting, it breaks it down, it'll make methane gas. And there's a guy out there who actually sells propane. All his trucks in his fleet run on propane. So propane, methane, all of those you can actually run existing engines on. You know, all you got to do to change over from like a gasoline engine to like an alcohol burner, it's just a matter of the jets that actually send the fuel in. You have smaller or larger jets depending on what type of fuel that you're using. And with diesel engines, it's a kind of a different type of scenario because you're actually atomizing this fuel into a small mist so that you can then put it in there and make it burn. And so I know all the concepts for every single internal combustion engine out there. And so with that said, you could take that that process that you're talking about where, you know, little microbes actually digest materials and turn that into methane gases that you can then turn burn to run the machinery that you're running. It's brilliant.
Wow, so they have, you're talking I don't know too much about this, but you're talking like a biofuel?
Yeah.
That can create give you gas, like to run your car.
Yeah. Anytime anything rots, it produces, methane. And, you know, like your septic tanks, you know, you could turn your septic tank into a fuel system.
They're talking lawn clippings and unrecycled paper could help break the world's oil addiction.
Yes. Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Well, like you said, you have methane actually is produced in any waste runoff stream for like when you flush your toilet and it goes out to the leach. It usually just goes out in the leach field and or into a septic tank that overflows into a leach field. You get anaerobic processes occur in that naturally. They get them in big plants where people flush the toilet and it just uses water to run the material off into a big treatment plant that you pay tax money dollars to treat the water, filter all the stuff out and send it back to you. Well, they can, to some extent, they do use the reformation of these materials, that anaerobic process, because it's occurring
you said something brilliant earlier about carbon. I can't remember what exactly you said earlier about, but everything on this planet is carbon based. All right, we live in a carbon-based world, and even CO2 and carbon monoxide. CO2 is two oxygen atoms connected to one carbon atom, and carbon monoxide is one oxygen atom connected to one carbon atom. CO2 could be recycled into fuel. Did you know that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you think about carbon, carbon is one of the most abundant minerals on the planet, materials, and we could replace a lot of our use of different metals with carbon using nanotechnology.
Yeah.
You know, nanotechnology is a very extremely broad term, but all these carbon nanotubes and graphene is one of the big buzzwords at this time. You can make long wires or just, you know, ribbons of graphene. It has implications in battery and
capacitor technology.
Capacitor technology and solar panels, solar cells, not only in the solar receiving part of photovoltaic cells, but also in the transmission part of it. Like I was saying, that it can conduct electricity very efficiently.
Yeah.
But it can conduct heat extremely efficiently.
Yep.
So we start using reforming these carbonaceous gases and materials and work out very efficient ways to turn it into graphene and pump out certain materials, we could have extremely cheap, extremely efficient solar cells. We could line our cars and you know, trucks. Imagine trucks. Oh, and I just read recently that the Bush family have just ordered 800 hydrogen fuel celled trucks to truck their alcoholic beverages around.
Cool.
And saying that,
wow.
Yeah, these trucks, you know, they have on a single charge, they got a 1,200 mile travel distance, and they are, they're basically, you know, taking, you know, reducing their carbon footprint of, they said, equivalent of 13,000 passenger vehicles, you know, per year, worth of carbon emissions.
Well, there's this company in Lancaster, California, Blue Fire it's called. They have their first plant at a landfill, and they're getting money from the U.S. Department of Energy. Okay,
yeah.
They have do 22 million gallons of ethanol a year, okay, and they just got 30 million, well, they got 10 million in funding, and the DOE has asked for 30 million more to develop a second facility.
Has any,
so there you go.
Has any one of you ever witnessed a pond turning over?
A pond?
Yeah, a pond. A regular, like a pond, like that on your your farm,
yeah,
or something like that. Have you ever witnessed one turning over?
Well, I don't know what you mean by turning over.
Well,
have a pond, basically, ponds here.
Basically what happens is when a pond goes out of balance, it starts to become stagnant. When a pond,
yeah,
becomes silted up, it basically causes a reaction where all that biological waste, such as tree leaves or grass clippings that get into the pond, finally soak down to the bottom. And what happens is when, you know, these compacted layers of biological, even dead fish or whatever, finally get down there and the pond goes stagnant, what you got underneath that mud is a methane and carbon dioxide being produced.
Like,
right?
Bubbles, Patty,
yeah,
says a big belch.
It, that's what it does. Exactly.
Wow.
It builds up a pressure under that mud that's compacted, and a big old bubble will literally you know, explode up underneath the pond and cause the pond to roll over, which puts so much methane and CO2 into the pond that it kills off all the fish. Well, what if I said that I believe that there's a method by which you could actually turn that pond into a fuel station? Instead of having that bubble being built up underneath there, you could actually tap into that bubble and be able to pressurize tanks that you could turn around and use that methane before it ever even got a chance to roll that pond over. You could siphon off that methane and be able to use that to run generators.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to ask you how you do that, but Patty says, why doesn't she come on? She says there have been remote mountain valley villages that have been killed by these turnovers plates.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And you turn a problem into a solution. That's one of the, that's the keystone of permaculture, folks. You go study permaculture. That's one of the keystones of permaculture is turning problems into solutions.
Yeah.
Instead of having the problem of, you know, ponds and lakes flipping over and killing people, we can, like she just said, just put a tap on it and run that stuff to big pressurized tanks.
Yeah, that sounds so simple. Just put a tap on it. What do you mean?
Well, think about this.
Exactly that.
Think about this for a second. All pressure and all energy, all it wants is an escape. It wants a place to go. All right, and so if you had a system by where you could actually put a grid at the bottom of your pond before you ever even build your pond or even in existing ponds, as the trees and stuff started falling in, you know, leaves and stuff or whatever died and fell to the bottom and the mud covered it up and it began to pressurize, it would look for a path out. The only path out would be through this grid system that you allowed, like tubing. And it wouldn't even matter whether or not the tubing was full of mud, because that pressure is more than enough to seep its way through that mud and go out the pipeline that you just created and into a pressurized tank. And believe me, if it's got enough pressure to produce a burp to turn an entire pond over, then it has more than enough pressure to pressurize a tank. And so you could actually design using maybe like stainless materials or whatever, basically a bleed-off system for any pond that could have the potential to get silted up or was already silted up, and basically use that methane or CO2 that had been produced by the process of nature basically rotting stuff up, you know, decomposing.
Now, could you do a video of that?
Yeah, I could do it in a little small, basically like a mason's jar, and actually produce a flame off of it, because all you have to do is replicate what's going on. Any of this biological stuff that's at the bottom of this water, you know, it's being oxygenated, it's beginning to rot, and after a while it'll start to stink, you know, but it is actually making fuel at the same exact time.
Yeah, the reason it stinks is because of the anaerobic bacteria.
Yep.
Whenever you smell, like, you know, swamp gas or, you know, a stinky fart, that's anaerobic bacteria either in the pond or in your gut that is acting upon something, rotting it essentially, and creating methane. And that's what the stink is.
Yeah, and it'll build up enough pressure that it will force its way out that pipe, quite literally.
If you made a
system basically where you're going to intentionally cork this pond, let's say you got a pond liner, and then you put a pipe in the middle of that pond liner that's all sealed up, all that water pressure holding that pond liner to the bottom of the pond, and all that biological that's up underneath there would produce enough pressure that it would force that gas out the pipe. It couldn't go through the pond liner, so it'd have to go out the pipe. So you could turn old septic ponds into fuel sources. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and that's a great idea. And you know, that's what anaerobic. If you think about the term anaerobic, that just means without air or without oxygen.
Yep.
So basically, anywhere where you have a spot where the stuff is trapped, the biological material is trapped to where it can't get air, the anaerobic bacteria is going to act on it. Now, it's the opposite of what you have in an open air compost pile. Compost pile has access to air, the aerobic bacteria is acting on it, and you don't get that real stinky, you know, methane producing smell.
Yeah.
Basically, if you want aerobic bacteria, you have to keep it air to it. When it's underwater, it doesn't have access to air, so the anaerobic bacteria is going to get to it and create the methane, and which, you know, is a danger, but it also can be a resource. It's all about, you know, understanding what's going on and engineering solutions to turn a problem into a solution.
Well, that's the whole thing right there. That's why I say we have every solution, every problem that ever existed in this world. Well, in hot water heaters, I can't remember what the actual... There's a sacrificial metal that's put in hot water heaters that anaerobic bacteria that you're talking about causes, like... people will say that their water smells sulfated. Well, that's yep. because they have an anaerobic bacteria deal going on there. But there are other materials. The reason why it starts to stink is because this particular, I'll have to Google it up to see what material you'd want in there, because you can actually buy an element and a replacement part for your hot water heater that if you live in a area where when your water comes through your hot water heater and smells like rotten eggs, you just change this element and it doesn't do it anymore. You know, because the certain material that the anaerobic bacteria love, they will eat that up and in the process release that stinky smell. Well, the solution's already available for that one. I told my friend about it. I'm going to Google this up here and see if I can find it.
Yeah, well, a lot of your well waters, you'll have some well waters that have that kind of eggy, sulfury smell, but I suppose it's just sulfur in it. But if you have biological waste, in ground, usually well waters come from wells deep in the earth. There's no oxygen or air access to it, so anything there is going to be acted on by anaerobic bacteria, and it's going to create that methane and, you know, similar gas. And, I mean, we can take methane, we can, you know, there's reformers, it can be used directly or reformed into ethanol, and,
I found,
you know, there's places to use it.
I found that the most common cause of smelly water is anaerobic bacteria that exist in some water and react with sulfur and the magnesium and aluminum sacrificial anodes that come with most water heaters to produce hydrogen sulfide gas, making the classic rotten egg odor. So just by changing from those two types of sacrificial materials, you can resolve that smell coming out of there. But nonetheless, that smell coming out of there could quite literally be fuel. Because have you ever seen people showing videos on YouTube where their water's flammable, the gas coming out of it? You ever seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everything could be a plus.
Yeah. And they're not burning the water, the actual water, they're burning that gas that's mixed up in it.
Yep.
And when you open up the tap, the gas comes out, and it's obviously the gas is lighter than the water, and it comes up to the top of it and burns off the top of the water. I mean, obviously we could burn water, that's a whole other topic on itself, but we're talking about right now, processes that create these gases off of the decomposition of organic matter. There's lots of ways to access that form of energy.
Yep.
Also, I wanted to mention what Barb had asked before, because she had mentioned the process of pyrolysis. I want to touch on that. We actually use the process of pyrolysis on the property that I'm on. We produce a product known as biochar. It's basically just producing a natural form of charcoal, and it uses the process of pyrolysis on wood. You pyrolysize wood, and it's similar, because pyrolysis is like burning something, but without air. Just like the anaerobic process, have to have a lack of oxygen or a lack of, you know, open air for it to work. The same thing is with pyrolysis. You're adding heat, but you don't have the oxygen for it to burn. So you're basically baking wood. When you perform pyrolysis on wood, it drives the volatile gases out without burning them. And this is where you get wood gas. That also could be trapped. You can separate it out. It's also usually when you have smoke, when you burn a fire, those gases are in the smoke. That's part of what smoke is when you burn stuff. But if you do this pyrolysis process, basically heating up wood in some kind of container that contains it so that it gets the heat is able to heat up, but it doesn't have access to open air. The wood gases will basically bake out of the wood, and that can be captured in gas tanks, just like, you know, natural gas or propane tanks. And that can be used for heating and cooking and stuff, or running vehicles. You see people running vehicles off of wood. That's what they're doing. They're basically running off these wood gases. And the other byproduct of that is charcoal. That's what's left after you drive all those volatile gases out. You got charcoal. As long as you don't actually burn the wood, left it's ash, which there are uses for that as well. But people commonly understand charcoal to use for to, you know, barbecue with or grill. Excuse me. The grill for you cook it and use it in your garden and biochar. What we use it. The project that I'm a part of, we make the biochar out of wood chips that we get for free from wood cutters. And we make biochar and fill it up.
Your Skype is cutting out on you. Huh.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Low signal.
Yeah.
But we buckets.
Yeah.
And you charge that biochar. It gives it extra minerals and nitrogen, and then once that soaks into the charcoal biochar, you put it out around your garden, and we put it around trees and cover it with mulch so that the nitrogen doesn't just leach off, and it adds a nice long feeding. To, you know, type of fertilizer to what, you know, your gardening.
Well, see, there's a lot of science up in there, man.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
It's simple stuff.
All you gotta do is pay attention to what nature's been doing all along, you know? We could, yeah. You know, as crazy as it sounds, we could even tap into the potential of volcanoes without ever having that volcano erupt. The only reason why a volcano ever erupts is because it gets a huge gas pocket underneath a hot molten rock and stuff. You know, all that gas that's being produced by, you know, the chemical reactions and heat that's going on down there builds up pressure, and then eventually it's got to pop. And so there's nothing to say that we couldn't actually tap into it and bleed that gas off. I don't understand why people don't get it. Where do they think natural gas actually comes from? It, you know, they find a natural gas pocket. Where do they think it actually came from? You know?
Yeah. It came from biological stuff, dying, getting buried in the earth, rotting, and then that gas gets trapped, and yeah, gas pocket.
Yeah, so because the same amount of chemistry that has existed since this world we live in came into existence is the same processes that'll be long after we're gone. And so as long as all these processes are going, we can tap in and utilize what nature has already done without the harmful side effects of having to, you know, dig new wells or anything like that. I never understood why it was that people couldn't figure out why they ended up with sinkholes in their yard. You know, if you take the hydraulic pressure underneath a piece of land that you're already standing on, like, for example, I live on a water table, all right? And if I pumped all the water out from underneath there, I no longer had the hydraulic pressure that was holding up the ground that I'm standing on. So if I pump all the oil out from underneath your house and your house falls in a hole, you can't blame me because, you know, how do I know your house is on top of it? But you actually could blame me because if I hadn't released that hydraulic pressure underneath your ground would have never fell. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's called responsibility. And
yeah.
It's gotten all messed up with the commercial law and, you know, quote-unquote law, the legalese and legalistic structures. And, you know, we've got corporations wanting to you know, divorce themselves of the responsibility. Well, they're just, you know, they're just trying to make a buck.
Scott is sober.
You know, it's not their fault.
What do you think is going on with all these sinkholes happening all over the place?
Well, Scott Salverin said down in the chat room on TCT side, said, would that not like be fracking? Shazus? Exactly what it'd be like. And the reason why all these sinkholes are popping up, go around and look. I think you can actually find a map on the internet of all the different fracking facilities. When they shoot high-pressure water or chemicals up underneath the ground to crack the ground, what they're trying to do is get gas to leak into that. So the moment they hit a pocket of gas or oil or whatever, it will start spewing out that crack. Well, if you're fracking all over the planet and you're basically bleeding off the hydraulic pressure that's underneath every single buddy's, every person's house and their land, and they wonder why it is that all these sinkholes are popping up. Well, it's common sense. You just took the hydraulic pressure out from underneath the street, and so now the street falls in. See, a lot of people don't understand why their basement foundations crack. Underneath your basement foundation, you have to have some sort of hydraulic pressure, which basically is a layer of water that, you know, it's muddy underneath your foundation. Well, during dry seasons, all that water will basically bleed off and run off, and then the ground below that gets dry, and your basement foundation falls down a little bit, which causes the pressure on the concrete and causes it to crack. And then when it rains out, the hydraulic pressure comes back, and it pushes it back up again. So your house is literally flexing back and forth. So if you take all the hydraulic pressure out from underneath your house, you're going to have issues unless your house settles onto a solid piece of ground and no longer has that issue anymore. If you keep it constantly drained off to where it can never get that water under there, it'll settle and stay settled. That's why
I was just going to ask this question, and Patty asked it, same thing. Is this, what about the earthquakes attributed to fracking?
Well, yeah, that's another thing too. Look, if you could actually see under the ground near fault lines, you'd see there's a big rock held up by a little rock, held up by another little rock, and maybe even a grain of sand. And while that's all kind of compacted in there, everything's fine. But if you start cracking this and cracking that, you get little rocks falling away and then the big rocks, and that's how cave-ins always occur. So if you're fracking a mile away, you could be causing an earthquake or a sinkhole several miles down the road because all this stuff is interconnected. You see what I mean?
You've got Texas earthquakes, you've got Oklahoma, and I remember reading things that the people in Oklahoma were blaming fracking, and of course the fracking companies were saying that's ridiculous.
That's because they don't want the liability, and they want to keep on doing what they're doing, and they can always claim it was an act of God, which it wasn't an act of God. You literally caused, they say, for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. So if I shake up the ground in my yard, you're going to feel it over there in your yard, because the same ground that I'm at, if it's got a fracture line already in there, all I got to do is destabilize that fracture line on my side, and it's going to cause some reaction, such as, you know, I dig out a big old pocket of dirt, and all that dirt that's holding up those rocks into place fall down into that hole. Well, that makes your ground loose. You see what I mean?
Well, you're looking at a 5.6 earthquake in Oklahoma on Saturday. When was this? Tied for the strongest quake ever recorded in the state. And odds are it was triggered by fracking operations.
Yeah?
Yeah. Injecting fracking wastewater, produced waters in general, and even from non-fracking operations. It's a connection between fracking and earthquakes in the central and eastern United States.
Well, see, there's a lot of natural earthquakes that are caused by the same kind of process. For example, let's say you got an earthquake several hundred miles away from you, all right? And on one side you got like maybe a water table or something like that, and then suddenly this builds up this pressure in this earthquake, and then it explodes. Well, Now you got some empty space that has to be filled in with something. All that water that was in that pocket rushes down and cools off, causes a bunch of steam on the volcano. But on the side where the water table is, you got sinkholes popping up, and you got earthquakes being produced by what would have normally been a natural reaction. So if you can't learn from what nature has already showed you what would happen if you tamper with the ground in that fashion, then you weren't paying attention to begin with. So man,
well, you have what they call subsurface pressure regimes that keep the fault closed.
Yep.
Right? So then apparently when you inject the water, this induces the earthquake of larger magnitudes. In other words, these are faults, right?
Well,
they're reactivation of nearby pre-existing faults.
Did you hear about the salt mines in I believe it was Louisiana that drained the swamp?
No.
Well, they had undermined they had undermined the deal to mine salt. Well, they had done it for so many years, all it took was for one episode of maybe a crawdad. Crawdads will always dig their way to fresh water, all right? So the crawdad digs a hole through the ground. Suddenly you got groundwater seeping down on the salt. Well, after a while, that salt will dissolve and it will open up the plug and basically drain, filling in that void that used to be the salt mine. You see what I mean? There's a lot of mines out there that, not too far from where I live, there's a place called Birmingham. They have a bunch of limestone caves. Well, they had to stop mining this one particular cave for limestone because they hit a natural spring. Well, there's a lake down there now that never goes dry because it's constantly fed by that natural spring. Well, not too far away from that, where they used to have like a really nice lake, there was a point in time where that lake was almost bone dry because it took and filled in that mine shaft, and it took a while for nature to put the water level back into where it was before. And water will always find its level, so if that mine is at a lower level than the lake itself, the lake will never find its level again. It'll be dry. You see what I mean? Until you find that hole and plug it up.
Now, what do you think about this? It says in this article, okay, because they're talking about the earthquakes and various other things, that they say, I'm questioning this. What do you guys think? It says, on the other hand, the fracking craze is responsible for the dramatic drop in carbon emissions in America because it has provided enough gas at cheap prices for natural gas to replace coal. And our emissions of carbon are now at a 27-year low.
So, run that by me one more time.
Okay, I think this is like an excuse for fracking.
I would just say, okay, and? So you create a big problem to solve another,
What this is saying is that this is a human environmental conundrum that makes policy decisions difficult. Okay, so they're really basically saying the fracking craze is responsible for a dramatic drop in our carbon emissions because it provides enough gas at cheap prices for natural gas to replace coal.
Well, that's pure ridiculousness because we just got through explaining how we could actually turn our trash and even nature's byproducts into fuel, so there's no reason to even do fracking, flat out.
Yep.
And while you're doing the fracking, you're not only causing environmental damage because some of the chemicals that they actually use in the fracking process, they leach off into other things, and they cause another problem where, like for example, I mentioned this a while back. I got a farmer that lives right next to me. He uses anhydrous ammonia and fertilizers and a lot of different types of materials on his crops in order to get them to grow. Well, when it rains, the runoff from that field goes into my pond. And now my pond becomes so incredibly super nutrient rich that the duckweed and the watermill will grow at such a rapid pace that it will block out the sunlight, collapsing the ecosystem inside that pond. And so I forever have tons and tons of biofuel because of the farmer not understanding that his process by to grow a healthy crop is destroying the ecosystem down the road on my side of the deal. You see what I'm saying? And so
yeah,
every bit of what they're doing out there within the fracking, if they are sending chemicals through there that aren't breaking down naturally, and they leach off into a pond water, now you have pond systems that are toxic enough that if the water becomes out too high of an alkaline in a pond, it will burn the fish's gills and they can't breathe and they die. And so when the fish die, there's nothing that will eat the watermill and the duckweed. And so by that, the watermill and duckweed will overgrow the pond. And you'll see this, an example, if you drive around, there are a lot more ponds with tons and tons of algae. The pond's all green that used to be a really beautiful lake, a really beautiful pond. It's because that ecosystem is breaking down.
Yeah, and they'll stay, then they start to stink because all that green, material is, like you said, just cutting off sunlight.
Yeah.
And it's also stealing all the oxygen out of the water, the available oxygen. So everything is suffocating in that body of water. Even if the fish were still alive, but because they're dead and rotting and causing more issues.
Yeah.
Even if they were still alive, they'd be suffocating, whether they had burnt gills or not. One way or the other, it's a system doomed to fail. It's doomed to cause a collapse.
Well, but there's plus. There's a plus in there. Even that algae makes perfect biofuel. You could clean that pond up. You could take the duckweed and watermill and turn it into all kinds of products. Plus, you could take and clean off every single lake when the algae starts to get overcome. Instead of throwing herbicides in there, you filter that algae out and you turn it into biofuel, and you give nature a chance to clean up the mess that you produce at the same time. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you create a lot of hydrogen fuel doing that.
Yep.
Well, I'm just going to touch a little bit on this because we were talking about the earthquakes and fracking and so on and so forth and taking stuff out of the earth. And, we have this situation, the San Andreas, right, fault?
Yeah.
And then, so they're talking about that here in this article because they said that the last great earthquake occurred in 1857. And the works that they're doing show that the next big one should have been in 1947, but they're still waiting for it. But then in 1900, extensive drilling for oil occurred in the Los Angeles basin and surroundings, and so on. So they extracted so much oil and water that we completely changed the subsurface dynamics of the San Andreas fault system and rendered useless their knowledge of the previous earthquake frequency.
Yep.
So now they have no idea when the big one will occur or how big it will be, considering that we have locked it up tighter than it ever was.
Oh, I got to retouch up on something here real quick. Scottish Sovereign, I guess whenever he made the comment about would that not be like fracking, she says, tapping into underneath the volcanoes. Yeah, but what I'm talking, the difference between what I'm talking about doing and as opposed to what fracking does is you're not going to suck all that gas out of there. You're just going to regulate and only take the pressure that's too much before the volcano erupts, if that makes any sense. So, if I put a pressure valve on something, before my hot water heater overpressurizes and explodes, I can release that pressure. And the only time that it will be extracting gas out of that volcano is when it pops that valve. That's it. When the pressure gets high enough that would have popped the volcano, instead it releases that gas into a container. So there might be intermittent gas pressures being released, but even that intermittent would be enough to make a difference in fuel. Does that make any sense?
There you go.
Well, Patty says, getting back to using waste to create energy, would it be possible to create an energy system that can be used by household waste, non-corporate, where people could build or purchase the units and produce their own energy?
Yes.
Like the and the Corps of Engineers also used silt to fill the swamps, building small levees and dams to drain areas to be able to build. The silt destroyed the natural system and turned many areas into waste areas, like venting.
Well, you could actually...
Well, that was three conversations.
Oh, I was wondering.
Well,
the swamp comment was when Shaz was talking about the Louisiana areas, and the venting is like what he's saying to do with the volcano, sticking the tube down there whatever, and allowing the gases to escape. It'd be like venting your hot water heater something.
Right.
Well, the same thing, everybody who lives on a septic system might have noticed that you have a vent valve or a vent pipe on your septic, because if you didn't, when all that rotting was occurring, your septic tank would basically overpressurize, and then you'd find out the true meaning of the doo-doo hitting the fan, so to speak. It'd blow up because gas, when any materials are vaporized into gas, it produces pressure from the expansion, and so your septic tank would quite literally explode. All right. Well, if you had a pressure valve on that septic tank, and the only time that pressure valve ever opened up is when it reached a certain PSI that was below the exploding pressure of your septic tank, then you could extract that methane off of your septic tank, never cause any problems with it whatsoever. And the only thing you ever have to do is maintain that pressure valve to make sure that it always stays at a certain level.
Yeah, that's why any pressurized system that's engineered, especially commercially available, you have to have some kind of safety valve, a pressure release, set to a certain, like you said, a certain PSI that's a safe amount below the bursting pressure of that container or that system.
Yeah.
So that, you know, even if it should never get to that pressure, if something happens, something gets clogged, something breaks down in the system in a way where it no longer operates as designed, you have that safety backup so that pressure can be released.
Yep.
You have that in cars. You have that in gas systems, commercial gas systems where, you have fuel lines coming into their house or... whatever. There's always things like that. Like I said, the septic systems, they all have a pressure release system. And usually it's waste. You know what you're saying? It vents out. If we had all those systems, we had a way to recapture that pressurized gas and recycle it either directly or, passively, like just tank it, put it in a tank and, use it or reform it somewhere else, it still is a resource that is generally wasted that we could be putting back into our energy system. And the more we reuse, or reform, reuse, recycle, repurpose, this is what, all these concepts, we just need to, take things, there's so much waste. Within all our engineered systems, man-made systems, that we could be using to greatly reduce the new energy that we're creating to feed our systems, because we're constantly, burning coal and natural gases and all these things to make new energy, but we could be using recycled sources instead of mined or whatever sources.
Well, we have the technology to quite literally turn our houses and all that we do in our houses into self-generating systems, because if you think about every aspect of your house, especially like if you got composition shingles on your roof, if you've ever been up there in the middle of summertime, there is so much heat generated on a roof that you actually have to have a vents in your attic so that your attic doesn't explode, literally, because that heat is pressure. Well, you could turn that roof into a thermal generator without ever having to buy any solar panels or anything like that. Just the heat of your roof alone could be tapped into. There's technology available, thermal technology, like Peltier elements, thermal couples, thermal piles, and all kinds of other possibilities. And actually running your water heater, circulating the water through your roof before you ever even bring it down into the heater, you'll have more hot water than you ever needed. And, you know, especially if you live in a desert type of climate, you got the perfect thermal generator right around you. And all of these processes, if you ever studied heating and cooling, HVAC, you know, terminology, but heating and cooling, how an air compressor and an air conditioner actually function, anytime you take a gas and you pressurize it, it gets hot. All right, and when you allow that gas to expand rapidly, it instantaneously goes in the opposite direction. It gets really cold, and that's how air conditioning actually functions. So you could turn the heat from your attic into pressure that could then in turn be rapidly released into an expansion chamber to where the heat of your attic is actually your air conditioner. So all the science is there.
I'll comment about that real quick. That you're about to say that all the science is there. Yeah, there is a scientist I saw years ago that developed a solar air conditioner that did exactly that. It used that thermal expansion cycle to take the heat, use the heat to expand a medium. And draw the heat out, and then compress the medium, draw the heat out, and then allow it to expand, creating cooling.
Yeah.
And he created an air conditioner that could run out in, especially in, you know, the hotter the areas, the more efficiently it worked. So you now have an air conditioner that uses a tenth of the energy, or electricity in this case, than a conventional air conditioning system.
Yep, and if you live in a humid climate,
and, you know, the hotter areas where it's needed most, it was most effective.
Yep, if you live in a humid climate,
just saying, it's engineered, it's there, it's available.
What happened? Doggone it, what's going on here? Sorry, folks, I lost the call there for a second. Let me try to get them back. Ed Burnett, what's going on here? Uh-oh. All right, well, you're listening to Mad Science, I hope. Something happened. I lost the call. I'm trying to get them back. Come on. Doggone internet connections. Alright, what the heck is going on here? Alright, well, we are still on the call, Shaziz. Are you live? Yes. Trying to get you back. Hold on a second. I'm trying to see what's going on. Skype just went crazy on me. What in the heck is going on here, man? Alright, well, I'll tell you what. While I try to figure this out, let me throw on a tune or two, and we'll get back here. I don't want everybody to sit here around half listening to me going, what happened? We'll be back in a second. Stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science.
what do, and what did I see? Your girls were wearing leather skirts and see-through jeans. I asked the DJ to tell me what was going on. He said, please stop having a freak.
Ruckus.
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I can describe the ruckus. We're back, folks. Got Holy Walker and Barbara and Patty on here. And, yeah, we had a little Skype issue on this one particular computer. Decided to lose its network connection. But either way, hope you enjoyed the music during the break, and we're going to get back to it. So, with that said, which one y'all want to take it first? Holy Walker?
Go ahead, Holy Walker.
Okay. My mute button was hiding from me. What was I saying when we got cut off?
About all the different potentials, where they were saying that it takes hundreds of thousands or billions of years to make that, but scientists can do it quicker.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about using oil and coal and stuff for energy, and how people have the idea that all these things can only be made over millions of years and Earth processes, and man can't make oil or man can't make coal. We can make charcoal, but we can't make coal. It's horse fucking because scientists have done it.
Well, and coal is carbon based.
Things are weak. It's just heat and pressure. Long as we can simulate those conditions, we can make this stuff. We can take plastics that we've made that, are leaching chemicals into the groundwater and whatnot. We can put them in a pressurized oven, basically, and turn it back into oil and then remake it into something else. So all these things, nature has shown us we can recycle these things. We can do what nature did to create them in the first place. just like she is always saying, you know, the process is always there.
Well, I find it interesting thinking about the corporations, you know, like Shaziz is always talking about, and you as well, and others talking about a natural way, a way that would be, you know, not assaulting the earth or not polluting, or, you know, you have the byproducts coming from the fracking that is really quite serious, and various other things that corporations, you know, use that are harmful, you know, but you're talking using natural things, you know, that would be, you know, not harmful to the environment and not harmful to people. But they don't even, for some reason, they don't even want to know about those things. They don't even care, it seems. I don't know. I just don't, that piece really is very frustrating, because there are ways, like you guys are talking about, there are ways of getting free energy and all manner of things that would be beneficial for, you know, for people plus the earth, but they don't want to know those. And if you introduce something like that, or if you are, you know, creating anything like that, the government comes and knocks on your door and basically tells you you can't do that, you know.
Well, I understand too what Barb is saying, because we have systems set up right now that are energy hogs that produce the littlest amount of energy for the biggest expense in energy. And these are the systems that run the world right now. And even though there is more than enough scientific evidence and creation of these other natural systems, we have a corporate system that will not allow it, and we know why, simply because of the control that the energy corporations have across the globe. They stand to lose billions upon billions when people become self-reliant. So we're not just up against the ignorance of the people, and I don't mean this in a bad way. It's just that people have not been able to receive the information of how we can go about producing our own energy in a way that is affordable for them and plausible for them. But we're also up against a system that will not allow that knowledge out. So we have a conundrum. How do we promote these solutions to the average everyday person? You know, you often see these shows where they have like an RV show or this show or that show or an expo on energy and stuff, and they want big bucks. Well, if you give us $300, you get 2 days worth of seminars and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, all that does is allow the corporations to bring their people in there and sit, or the people, the people who make six figures or above.
How will you
that's not where the problem is. That's not where the problem is. The problem is the people who really need this free energy are the people below those six-figure salaries, and they can't afford these expos. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. She says, how do we move this out of the money game and into the go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, it's interesting. I just happen, right now I'm at a little expo information share event right now, sponsored by this group where I am here in Florida, called the Rosebud Continuum, and I'm looking at examples of aquaponics systems and, you know, bicycle generator over here, and we got some goats, and, you know, there's going to be talks about all these different things of alternative energy and self-reliant food sources and all these things. So I'm going to have to get off of here in a minute, because I want to go and check this stuff out. There's going to be talks and and it's a free, you know, free event. They, you know, run by, they just accept donations kind of thing. So, but it's a, I'm at one of these, solution places right now.
Can you do me a favor while you're there?
What's that?
If you happen to be out around talking to people about, you know, all these different alternative energy ideas, recommend them to come join the Mad Science and talk about what they've got going on, and so we can share some ideas with them as well.
Sure. Oh yeah, I'll let people know. I mean, you got Saturday and Sunday.
Yep.
Show's going on, right?
Saturday for Mad Science and Sunday for the Knights of Round Table, which basically both of them kind of intertwine because we are talking about solutions, how to fix the world. And, you know, when it comes to political or, you know, stuff that's going on out there in the world, you know, that we talk about on Knights of the Round Table, all the solutions have to do with energy. You know, Tesla believed a long time ago that if you could give the world free energy, there wouldn't be no need for all these wars, and that's the whole thing. There's no resource that we've got on this planet that we're ever going to run out of, all right, including crude oil. It's not possible as long as the chemical, the pressure, the heat, and everything keeps doing what it's been doing for all these years. We will always have fossil fuels, what they call fossil fuels, which is a misnomer, because you can make crude oil out into plastics, and you can turn those plastics back into crude oil. It doesn't matter. We ain't going to run out of nothing. But if we use it more efficiently, more wisely, we can do it in such incredible fashion of efficiency that we don't harm the environment. See, here's the thing. If you think about this world as a fishbowl, if you got a fishbowl and you got your little goldfish in there and you keep putting food in there and the natural processes take over, eventually that water will become so acidic that you kill the fish. It'll burn its gills, it can't breathe, and it die. Well, that's what we're doing to each other by, doing all these processes like fracking or whatever. We're basically peeing and pooing in our own fishbowl, and the only outside force that's keeping everything filtered and cleaned out is nature. Well, nature needs a little bit of help if we're going to survive, because we're making the mess faster than nature can clean it up. It takes a little while for nature's process to work. But these systems that we were talking about, like Stephen mentioned in the chat room, and I may very well look into it because, why not get the government to help out with something? He said, don't know about your state, Shaziz, but you may be able to qualify for a grant for your pond and land if you're using it for conservation. Well, that's pretty much what I'm doing, and I could actually use things that are going on in my property to show people these techniques that I'm talking about, and, you know, having the funding to put some machinery together or something to take off just enough of the duckweed and watermill to keep the pond in balance, but also be able to use that waste product that I just took off of it to turn into different products like biofuel. Duckweed can be used as fish food. You can dry it out and make fish food flakes. And so in the process, the farmer trying to fertilize his property threw my pond out of balance, but then created a product that could then in turn put my pond back into balance, if you understand what I'm saying. Because the chemistry, if you understand the chemistry and the basic science of what just occurred from the farmer's field to my pond dying, then we know now the answer to how to fix that, to get it back in. The farmer could keep on doing what he's doing, and it wouldn't do nothing but keep generating more fuel and more fish food for, what would then in turn be a filtered, clean, healthy pond. And so by showing people that I can take what would have naturally been a disaster that the farmer created inadvertently because he didn't understand the ecosystem downstream, that it turned that into a plus. You see what I'm saying? There are golf courses out there that pay thousands of dollars per year to have their ponds cleaned out because they want their ponds to look beautiful for the golfers who are high dollar paying customers, and they want a nice golf course. So they will put herbicides in the pond, which basically throws the pond even in worse disrepair. And there's an ongoing deal. But if they had a system that could be engineered, which is ridiculously simple and could be done at a low cost with, you know, already readily available materials that you can buy right at the hardware store, and then take the excess duckweed and watermill being generated by this pond being out of balance and allow the sunlight to still be able to get into the pond to keep the ecosystem in the pond alive, and take that waste off there and re-guide it over to some place where it's no longer a waste. Because instead of the farmer using some sort of industrial fertilizer or whatever, you could take the now highly nutrient-rich duckweed, put it on the farmer's field, and fertilize his field naturally. And eventually the whole system will balance itself out.
Well, you know, I had an experience when I was working for the winery, to where we had condensation ponds that were the runoff from their cooling systems and things like this, water runoff and things from the buildings, and the stilling pond created algae in a big way. And when I put the vineyard in for my boss, I told him that I would do it organically. Even the 5 acres I prepared from fallow fields organically. And so when this algae bloom started in these condensation ponds, my boss immediately comes back and he drops off these bags of chemicals that he wants me to put in the water. And I told him that, you know, I can't do that. And so what I did was I took the algae out every morning. For 2 hours I would spend taking algae out of the pond, and I would take it and put it in a wheelbarrow. Then I would take that wheelbarrow and I'd take it to the orchard where we had elderberries, and I would put it as mulch. And my elderberries were wonderful. They did beautifully. Things like this can be done, like you were saying, with the duckweed. I mean, there's so many uses for it. There's no reason to have a pond that is not being utilized in one way or another. If you have duckweed, then hooray. You know, you've got fertilizer, you've got mulch, you've got feed, you've got all of these different things. If you don't have an algae problem or a duckweed problem, then you've got good water. All of these things that we do are very simple and can be done in organic manners. And be very, very effective. The thing that we're dealing with is time consumption, which was my boss's big thing. You know, well, you're spending 2 hours every morning, Patty, out there raking that pond out. Well, how much do you spend on the chemicals that it takes, you know, that it would take to keep this pond clear?
Yep.
You know, so there's no... It's a misnomer to say that it's more time-consuming, costs more money to have it done organically than to be done chemically, because you also have the problems that come with these chemicals that are being put into the water and what they're doing to the soil and what they're doing to the water and the life within that water, you know?
Well, the thing about it is... On that particular instance, if you didn't plan on having, let's say, fish or, you know, anything in these ponds, maybe they weren't deep enough for that, they just, you know, like you said, condensation ponds, you could intentionally introduce duckweed to that pond, which would filter that pond water out. Underneath that duckweed is pure water, it's clean water, because duckweed will quite literally pull any toxins out of that water. And the reason why it always fails as far as in that actual pond is nothing's ever done with it. it becomes stagnant. The water is not moving. It's never, right. never not done with it. But you could actually pump water out from underneath the duckweed, and it's already filtered.
You well, that's what we finally did. We finally did put a sprinkler system in the middle of the pond to aerate.
Yep.
But the benefit to this condensation pond, which you were right, it wasn't very deep, but it produced a large family of frogs. And this large family of frogs kept down the caterpillars that went after my grapes.
Yeah.
So, and then when we also had the herons that came in because they ate frogs. So it kept everything in balance. When nature is allowed to do its work, it does it very efficiently. And that's what we learn if we are paying attention, that nature has a system, and this system works. It's fail-safe. If we allow it to be, it's only when we start meddling into it, when we start deciding that, well, we want it quicker and we want it faster and we want it, you know, more convenient. We don't want to have to put the labor into it. That's when we end up with waste systems that continue to pollute. That's when we wind up with water systems that are polluted. When we shirk our own ability, you know, there's Mark in the background. But when we shirk our responsibility to nature, it's when it bites back.
Yeah,
you know,
that's it. And the thing about it, just like you explained, if you pay attention to nature, nature already provides the solutions. First time I saw my pond going green like that, I was automatically trying to look around for ways on which I could get rid of that duckweed, you know, because I wanted a nice, beautiful pond. Well, until I got into doing all the research necessary to understand why the duckweed was there to begin with, I hadn't had a clue. But what would have then been an obnoxious, deal, I found out becomes a benefit, because if I keep that duckweed down to a certain extent, the fish still have food. I don't even have to feed my fish because they will eat the duckweed. And actually, people can eat the duckweed too, but you got to cook it because they got little spiny roots on them. And if you don't cook it right, then you end up with a stomach ache. But nonetheless, it's really highly nutrient rich. And it's fish food, it's fertilizer, and so if I take off just enough that makes my pond clean and leave a little bit around the edges for the fish, you'll actually see the fish swimming up to eat the stuff, you know. And goldfish love it. So I can use that process to generate, biofuels, fertilizers, fish food, and a bunch of other different things. Once I figured all that out and was paying attention to what nature did and why nature did what it did and why it got out of hand, because the farmer is constantly putting stuff on his crop because he wants his crops to be really good so he can take them to market and have a lot of money, you know, provide for his family. But with these processes learned from this, if we could get enough people involved and interested in not panicking when they see, like when you said the algae was starting to take over the pond, it'll destroy the pond. It'll make it to where the sunlight can't get through. But if you knew what you could actually do with that algae, you could actually clean that algae off on a regular basis, allowing the sunlight to still get in and keep the ecosystem going, but then turn around and take that algae and use it for fertilizer on your doggone golf course and not have to pay for industrial fertilizer. And if enough people realize that this is a potential that would save them a lot of money per year and help the environment out at the same sense, these systems that we're talking about building, you know, we could get people to build these doggone things. You know, engineer them, give them the designs for free, allow them to do it, and once everybody started seeing the results of it, that's how I think we can get things going on. There's a lot of people who claim to love the nature and the environment, but they don't think that they got any kind of options available. Patty just explained to you, Barbara and Holy Walker just explained to you all kinds of different solutions to, power, even in alternative medicines as far as that goes, because there's a lot of natural herbs that you could use this algae and duckweed and watermill as fertilizer to make them grow in abundance. So,
yeah. I was going to say, I'm looking at this article. I popped it into the Skype chat about this guy in New Jersey. He's using the duckweed as a biomass, alternative power, and he says it will become the only commercial duckweed bioenergy conversion operator in North America.
Well, there need to be a whole lot more of them. This is why I put the show like the Mad Science and Knights of the Round Table. You always hear me talking about the Dream Team. And the Dream Team is basically you. It's you and me together taking all this knowledge that we've gathered and the access to even more knowledge with each other and the research available out here. I'm trying to get people to the microphone. I'm trying to get people to come here and join us on the show and tell us what you've been doing, things that you've done. And the people who are supposedly really concerning about the environment, they might know how to apply for grants from the government to do this kind of research. And as far as getting anything done, like Patty mentioned earlier, we're up against this big old machine that's trying to make money, and they're not going to want us talking about this stuff. But I'm saying this, don't ask for permission. Just show your neighbors how to keep their pond clean and, make some extra products in the process, and your neighbors are going to do it. One thing you'll find out about people, if enough people want something bad enough, you say they tried it back during the Prohibition when they illegalized made it illegal for alcohol. They started a black market. The people wanted their liquor and they weren't going to get their liquor, so they were ready to fight over it. They were ready to go to jail. They were ready to go to war over it. And when they realized that enough people were willing to do this and they made the situation worse by trying to ban it, they had to basically make it legal again with regulations. The same thing would apply with hemp or cannabis or any of these other deals. If enough people wanted it bad enough, there's already a supposed war on drugs, a black market of selling drugs under the counter, marijuana, or even health drugs for that matter. And the only way to beat the system is to stop asking for permission and show your neighbors how that this is beneficial. By leading by example.
You know what the curious thing is?
Yeah.
Think about this. You have countries like Germany and Iceland, places like this, who have gone into the alternative energy systems and markets. Here in the United States, we have so many. We have the wind generation, corporate wind generation, corporate solar. All of these things, and they're touting these things and saying that these are alternative energy methods that need to be utilized. Yet, they are the only ones who are able to do this. When we step out and we decide to do it on our own, that's not plausible. Case in point, different states say that you are not allowed to be off the grid if you live within their city limits. Now, here's the conundrum that we have to think about. Why is it okay for these corporations to be able to utilize these energy systems and not okay for the people to be able to utilize them? Maybe what we have to do is just what Shaziz said. Turn your back and do it yourself anyways. Make a stand, they're not ever going to say, oh, it's okay for you to step off the grid. We don't want you to have to support our corporation anymore. We're going to give control back to the people. That's not going to happen. The people have to take control. Just saying. Yep. Just saying. Steven, I want to put that in there.
Steven, that's brilliant. Steven said in the comment, how long has the world had atmospheric electricity? Ever since the world was together. There's free electricity all over this planet. You know, or flat plane, whatever you think it is, it doesn't matter. This world we live in is a self-contained biosphere generator of epic proportions, and it has more than enough resources to withstand 10 times the population that it's got right now. And for people who think I'm crazy, first off, you need to pay attention to nature. Nature will balance itself out. If this world ever got overpopulated, then this world would fix it, flat out. You got too many fish in a pond, then the oxygen level drops down and the fish die off and they're recycled into the system. That's the way it is. It sounds terrible. You get 120,000 trillion billion people on the planet, you know, we're all pretty much going to, you know, make a mess of things, and, you know, nature's going to clean house. That's the way it works. You know, but nonetheless, before we get into all the crazies of why people want to think they got to depopulate the planet or go to war with one another, every single argument that they throw on the table can be debunked with basic science, basic physics, and the laws of nature. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. So when the world is ready to resolve the issues of everything under the sun, then we got the solutions. And we've had them for a long time. We got all the fuel we'll ever need in a trillion lifetimes. We can make machines that will work in perfect harmony with nature without ever even harming nature. Once you understand the basics of carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide is only the difference between one oxygen molecule or atom, whatever you want to call it. Nonetheless, there's a carbon deal in there. Plants love carbon, they turn it into sugar, and it's food for plants. And they give us the oxygen we breathe. But carbon is also fuel. And so, if you want to design systems that are going to scrub CO2 because you think it's causing the planet to heat up, well, if you believe in that ridiculousness, then support somebody who says you can fix it with simple solutions that nature has already provided. It's just, it blows my doors off. It blows my mind to think that the people are still complaining about how this planet in such disrepair and how we're all going to die if we don't get the situation under control, which may very well be the case because you can only pee and poo in your fishbowl so long before you can't breathe anymore. Nature has to have time to clean it up, and I say we can assist it with technology that's already in existence. And as far as the average Joe out there, if they won't allow you to get off the power grid knowingly, then get off the power grid unknowingly. There's ways that you can supplement your energy usage in your home without having to pay such a high electric bill. And so you could turn things off as a simple thing. You could unplug things that aren't being used because every single appliance is plugged in the wall that has any kind of transformer. That primary is still using power and it's generating heat. So if you got 100 different little transformers in your house, it gets warmer in your house because that heat has to go somewhere. It helps to heat up your house, and so your air conditioner has to work harder. But if they're not plugged in, then they're not generating heat, and so they're not wasting energy. So just by building a smart grid in your home, you could save yourself a whole lot of money. And then by having people help you re-engineer, there's no reason why your air conditioner has to use 220 volts AC or even 120 volts AC, depending on which unit you got. Because there are ways to compress that gas without ever even using electricity. Just using what nature's already provided. If it's hotter than heck outside, and you understand how materials transfer heat energy, you can take that heat energy from the outside and you can use it to take a medium like Holy Walker mentioned, pressurize that, and then run it through an expansion chamber and get free air conditioning in your home all the way during the hot season. And then that same thermal process will work in reverse even in the cold side of the deal. So there are solution after solution after solution. The only way that I can get this kind of motion going on or ideas actually enacted is to beg and plead people that if you're listening to this podcast and you understand what I'm talking about and you want to even if you want to test it just to see if I'm telling you the truth, first off, do a little bit of research. Second, support this by getting people to the table. Bring people to the table and we can explain it to them like just like we just did on the podcast. We can show them our methods on how to do this stuff. And if you get enough people doing that, enough people saving money, your resources together, if I save $100 a month on my electric bill, I'll throw that $100 in the pot to any researcher out there who will build a water filtration system for somebody in this world. I will take whatever I'm spending right now. If I cut my energy cost in half that money that I normally would have paid, I will invest in charities. I will invest in research to benefit. And you can imagine, if I do that and everybody else does that, the corporations have power because they have money. They have a lot of money. And instead of me asking you for a donation, I will take the knowledge that I'm talking about and I will be donating to you in order for you to take your skill set and your knowledge and build systems to help clean your neighbor's pond up or to help recycle your community's trash and all that kind of stuff. So together, our combined resources, if each one of us only had a dollar to get this thing started, and we put that dollar to somebody we knew was going to be trustworthy and get the job done, I'd be the first one to put my dollars in that pocket. All right, because I know the outcome of it means that when we actually get a working system going on in this neighborhood, that neighborhood over there is going to say, hey, look at that. They're not spending as much money as we are trying to keep things clean. They're allowing that system to do it for them. Let's sign on. All right? And that's how you get it done on a grassroots level. You can call your congressman all day long. And unless your congressman is a hardcore environmentalist or even cares about it, then he ain't going to do nothing. He or she or whatever the case may be. Yeah, senators, congressmen, parliament, all the different governmental systems out there, their track record stinks, and they have lobbyists that keep them in money and keep them in caviar and wine and driving around in corporate limousines and flying in corporate jets while all the time telling you that you got to put your carbon footprint, you got to reduce your carbon footprint and put your carbon tax money out there so that they can find a solution. And we're telling you right now, we are the solution. You got the solution. And when you're ready to use it, you'll stop paying the man. It's as simple as that. All right, catch my breath, ladies.
Well, that was a good one. I like that rant. What I hear you talking about is, I think it's like the way we once were.
Yep, I believe you.
You know, is really working together and helping each other, not for money, but for everyone to live a good life, you know, to a better life, a good life, a supportive life, responsible, I guess you'd say, you know, the new phrase now, I think it's the new key word, is where we go one, we go all. Seems to be moving across the world. And I think that that's sort of like the mindset that we've gotten away from, you know. It's like everyone is self-absorbed, or it's me, me, me. The kind of me movement, I, or, you know, not a collective connectedness, but an individual mindset. I want mine, and as long as I can get mine, then I don't care about others, you know.
Yep.
And I think this has become a very selfish, narcissistic society, and I think we've moved so far away from our tribal connectedness, or what I call tribal consciousness, or community and original way of people on the earth. And, you know, what you're talking about, Shaziz, is you will, with a good heart, you don't want the money, you want to help people. And I believe that when we do that, we will receive enormous rewards on so many other levels that we, when we help others, we receive tenfold what we give out, and we will be gifted in return on in many ways, you know. You'd be surprised, you know, because there are other people who feel that way too. You know, the kindness is a very important thing that we have, that we are lacking. Compassion for others, you know, observing, looking and being one with and connected to others, our neighbors and people on the street or people wherever we go. I was in the grocery store a couple of weeks ago and had to stop in for some paper goods, and I don't often go into the big corporate grocery stores. And I'm standing in the checkout counter and waiting, and I'm looking at the people, you know, the woman at the checkout who was checking other people out, and other people walking around pushing the carts of foods, or if they are foods, I don't even know, but you know what I mean. And I was looking at the faces of the people, which I do. I'm a people watcher, people observer. And I just, looking at them, and I'm saying, wow, I hope that I'm not as confused and sorrowful looking as these people that I see around me. The energy in the stores, that's why I don't go to them very often, is a different energy. I experience it, and I was just saying, but my heart was really, I felt sad in the store because of the way, you know, you can see the worries on the people. You can see the pressures. And we all need help. You know, we all need to reach out to each other, even if it's just, you know, a smile. Yes, Patty, my sister, a defeated look. That's exactly right. And then you hit it right on the head. Defeated. These people, you know. And it just really hit me. And I think it's I think that's why I stay away from these stores. But, you know, there are many people who can't stay away. They have, this is where they go, right? But it's not just that. Every day, you know. So if you had a neighbor, if you had a friend, if you had a group of people who invited you to come and sit down for a potluck dinner or bring what you can, let's just sit down and be people together. Right?
Yep.
So I'm just saying, what I hear you talking about, you know, is something that's unheard of in a lot of ways. And I'm not saying there are people who do things without their hand out and say, okay, pay me, you know. But I'm just listening to what you're saying because you have all of this gift. You've been given these gifts. And I believe we've all been given gifts. And I believe that these gifts are meant to be shared, not to be made money off of.
Yep.
You know, and I think Creator gave us, every one of us, a special gift. Now, it could be anything. It doesn't matter. But it is a gift that would be important to share. That's why Creator gave us these things. And when we share our gifts, we feel fulfilled and we feel whole. And we feel like we fulfilled a purpose here, the reason we came here in the first place. So
well, I believe that as well. And so, folks, it's down to it. About time for us to get up out of here. But I want to go around the table kind of like we do on the Knights of Round Table. And basically, I'm sitting here trying to pour my mind and my heart out and trying to lobby the world out there for the average Joe to come together. I'm looking for the dream team. That's as simple as that. I've been looking for the dream team for a long time. I believe that we have the energy needs resolved. I know that we actually need some sort of working devices to give to the world as far as you know, things that they can use to supplement at the very least their power. I know all the science. I know all the physics to it. I know how to engineer it. I know everything I need to know, but I need the people out there who, with the talent. I need the people with the talent and the skills to quite literally come together, pull our resources, and make it so. I mean, there's no reason why anybody in this world should ever have to drink a dirty glass of water. There's no reason why anybody in this world should ever have to starve. There is no reason why anybody should ever have to go to war over any type of resources. And the prime example is power industries and oil and gas and all the different, you know the deal. We don't go to war because these people attacked us. We go to war because these people want our resources, or these people have a different ideology or whatever. There's no reason for it. And it, like Tesla believed, that if you could solve the so-called energy crisis, which we never had, then you would take away the excuse to go to war. You would take away the reason to go to war. And that would change the world almost overnight. And so, with that said, I am reaching out to anybody that's listening right now to pass the link to this podcast to somebody, anybody, environmental groups, government entities, I don't care, anybody who would be take the time to listen to this podcast, to hear the common sense. It's all based on real science, real physics, and available technology. It is real solutions that could be enacted and on an individual basis benefit your family, and on a larger, grander scale go from your villages to your towns to your cities to your states to the continents and to the world as a whole. We have the answers when we're ready to use it. I am begging you to take this podcast and get the ball rolling. I am going to basically fund my future research with your trash if you allow me to do so. I'm not saying don't burn your trash and throw it on the front lawn. I like my lawn to look clean. But I will put together a plan by which, if there's a way that you can donate trash to the recycling center, and if they want to throw some pennies in the bucket, you'll have a list of researchers that you could decide whether you trust them or you don't trust them, and then you can tell the recycling place to send those funds to that person's account directly, and it'll never touch my hands unless you send it my direction. Then that will be accountable research funds that will actually receipts everything, every proof of what that money went for. We'll be out there on the table for all to see. So, you know, there ain't no people trying to say, oh, shaziz, that you're trying to scam people out of their trash to get rich. Well, Grandpa did say one man's trash is another man's treasure. So if you give me all your electronics that you don't want anymore, I'll have a lot of electronics in my yard. But if you think about what's inside those electronics, I'll have parts, I'll have gold, I'll have silver, I'll have aluminum, I'll have brass, I'll have copper. All these things are coveted metals by mankind that at some point in the game will be valuable as far as money-wise, or even bartering if it gets that bad.
And platinum, don't forget platinum.
That's it, platinum. So with that said, when you ladies want to start with your last words of wisdom, or even plea to the world to pass this doggone podcast. I ain't never had one podcast go viral. You know, otherwise, if they had heard what we said and all the solutions we put on the table, we'd have so many people pouring in here with ideas and, you know, wanting to be part of a deal like that. You know, I don't know why it is we can't get this message out to where it matters, and that's to every single buddy and his brother. If you want to save money on your electric bill, let us show you how. You know, we're not going to charge you nothing, and if you want a one of those meetings where they get together in like big old halls and you want somebody to come there as a guest speaker, I'll come there and talk for free. All right? I even pay my own way there if I can get there. All right, I'm not asking for anybody. I'm not asking for anything in return. I just want to give you the ideas that I've got in my mind, and hopefully you will take them ideas and run with them and make this world a better place. So, with that said, why don't you want to go first, or what?
Go ahead, Patty.
Well, I just want to echo the sentiment that those people who are listening to this broadcast that listen every Saturday to the Mad Science broadcast, there's always, I've never listened to this show or been on this show that there have not been doable, usable ways of creating self-reliance, of a way of taking responsibility for your own energy needs, for your own waste usage, for everything in your life. We have the answers. They're here every week. And if you're listening every week and you agree with what's being said, then why are we not sharing this information? Why is it not being plastered everywhere? We all have social media accounts. All you have to do is copy the link and post it. That's all it takes. Just copy the link, post it. Let other people see and hear what we're talking about. People today, they want the quick fix. But now we're in a situation to where the quick fix is not fixing anything. And people realize this. And we know that there has to be change. But we're not hearing the message that the solutions are already here. Like Tesla. Over 100 years we've had the information, but it's not been acted on. And it's because we rely too much on the corporate nature of life. We want somebody else to handle it for us. We want somebody else to do the deed, to do the dirty work. We like the fact that we can come in and flip the switch and it's already done. But we don't like it when we get that bill at the end of the month and we're looking at these exorbitant costs of running our homes. And every month, every year, it goes up and up and up. Now there are smart meters that are restricting usage, that are metering out usage, and that are monitoring. Is this where we want to go? When we have all of these solutions that free us from this? We cannot be afraid to step out of the box. We cannot be afraid to step away from the monopolies that have been created to provide us with what they think we need while our environment suffers. We need to make change. And the way we do this is simply by education, by letting people know that there are simple answers, that there are doable answers, and that's our responsibility. Shaziz has done the homework. He's done the research. He can do what we need to have done. He can tell us how to do it. Now we have to do our part in this, and we have to share this information. That's the least we can do, right? It's the least we can do. This is important. This is more important than anything else right now, because this is the future for us. Either we can become what we want, or we can stay where we're at. You know, it's all on us. And I just wanted to say that. And thank you all for listening. Stephen, you rock. You know I love you. Red, all you guys in the chat, T-Dog, thank you for listening. And Shaziz, thank you so much for caring enough to do this every week.
Well, thank you for joining me, because I was running out of breath.
I know you were.
Oh, man. Yeah, I tell you, ladies saved me so many times, and Holy Walker being on here, he's an awesome person. I love him to pieces. I hope he comes back more often. So what about you, Barbara?
Well, you may have heard Patty told me my mic was hot, and I didn't realize it, but my daughter just came in with a beautiful bouquet of flowers from my son and my grandchildren, so was just delivered for Mother's Day, you know, and I always say, yeah, it's sort of like the world suddenly wakes up, oh, wait, it's Mother's Day, but every day is Mother's Day in my estimation, like just every day is Earth Day, you know, not just one day a year, and but, you know, I'm very happy to always be here with you and everyone on the chat and the listeners. And I feel that, I feel some frustration coming from you, my dear, and I get that. I feel that way sometimes as well in the work that I do, you know. Excuse me. The work that I do, meaning the message I was given or the vision I was given. You've been given a vision. Patty's been given a vision. Two dog. You know, I'm sure Holy Walker, like I say, Creator, Great Spirit, chooses every one of us to do some good work here. And sometimes you feel like, wow, it's nothing happening, and you're doing this work, and because you have a love in your heart, and because you've got a vision, and because you've got a message, and I guess I just keep saying, you know, I learned how to do this, just to have that trust and faith that as long as you are doing your sacred works, and you just keep putting it out, you know, you're touching someone. Don't think that you're not touching anyone. Excuse me. Just because hordes of people aren't breaking down your door. Because I went through that. I said, well, maybe I'm not making any impact here, you know, like, what am I doing? You know, like, it feels like there's not enough people responding, or I don't see any signs that what I'm sharing or talking about, you know, the vision of raising our frequency and using, excuse me, the energies that Creator gave us, the heart energy, the love energy, the compassion and kindness energy, because that can change the world. What you're talking about can change the world, you know, what we all share here. So, you know, I know that it can be frustrating at times, and sometimes we need to be picked up a little bit. We kind of get down and feel like, well, this seems to be useless. I'm talking to a brick wall here, and, you know, I went through that, and, you know, we lift each other up, and that's what we're doing here, supporting you, and we all support each other, and because this is really key and crucial, so significant now in this timeline, and yeah, it takes an effort for people to say, you know what, I'm not gonna stay hooked up to this grid, or I'm gonna work towards this. I'm gonna take one step at a time, and that's all it takes. Just do one step at a time, one little thing, then go to the next one. Succeed with one piece, turn around and go to another. This is all it takes. This is a lot of information we're giving you, and I don't know half of what Shaziz is talking about, the technology stuff, but I do feel it strongly that it is important. It's not only important for us today, but it is important for our grandchildren and the generations coming, because we can't continue like this. We just cannot continue the way we are living, carelessly. You know, just downright careless. I don't know, because I think things have been too easy, and perhaps that's been deliberate. Make things so easy for the people that they won't really care. You know, they don't want to lift a finger, they don't want to move off the couch, they don't want to put their iPhone down, they don't want to get away from the computer, they don't want to go explore or talk to a neighbor or you know, hook up with Shaziz, you know, or even investigate anything, because life is too easy. It's been too easy. And even though it's really not that easy, even though people think, yeah, this is good, but it's really not. It really isn't in a lot of ways. It takes a great effort and awareness and I guess you'd want to say caring. What do you care? You know, what do we care about? Do we care about the water? We all know what's happening with the water. You care about, you need the air, you need the water, you need the earth, you need, this is what we need. And nobody's realizing, or don't want to realize, or it's too hard, or it's too much of an effort, or I don't know what I'm doing, or I don't know how to do it. These are all foolish excuses.
Yep.
And I guess the way it makes us complacent when they give you everything and then they really aren't giving you anything, well, really, if you look.
I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, I see where I'm going way over time here. I'm just going on, but I just want to thank everyone. And I always say, you know, I have a great gratitude for the beauty and everything that we ever needed is right here on the Mother Earth. And really some powerful and amazing solutions are given to us by people like Shaziz. And just giving you, send out a love to you and love to everybody and numerous blessings. And, yeah, that's it, Doksha.
Thank you very much for that. So two things, folks. It only takes a spark to start a forest fire. I'm not saying go out and start a forest fire. I'm just using that as an example. Positive pebble in the pond affects everyone in the pond. I put another link to a t-shirt that I'm going to have made for myself personally. You know, I'm not trying to sell t-shirts once again, but what I want you to do, if you would humor me, is to take this phrase that says, "Mad science is the key to truth about free energy. Ask me why," and put the website www.shazizradio.com on there. You know, I do sometimes get frustrated because I know we have the solutions and it doesn't seem like things are moving faster, but what Barbara just explained to me is that essentially I'm at spark starting that forest fire. So sooner or later, somebody's going to stumble onto this podcast. You know, I'd like it to be sooner than later because, you know, I'm getting old. We're all getting old and I'd love to leave a really nice world for my children. And I'd love to leave a safe world where we don't have to worry about wars and starvation and sickness and all that kind of stuff. I believe we have that potential. I believe that our Creator put us down here for a purpose. I believe that if we work together, we could have such a wonderful world that it would be amazing to you. You'd never have to worry about things. Except maybe stubbing your toe or falling over, but that's human nature. We're going to do stupid stuff, but we need to stop doing the ridiculous stuff, such as, you know, paying corporations to destroy our world, and that's exactly what they do. We pay our senators and our congressmen and our parliaments and all of our representatives around the world to quite literally put us in misery, put us in bondage, and make our lives quite literally a living hell. Pardon the French, but that's what it is, you know. And sometimes you have to call a spade a spade. They make our life miserable. They keep us in bondage. And my greatest fear is not that the people aren't always going to have some sort of gift that they could use. It's the fact that they become so complacent that they have become lazy in their own lives and lazy to the world and basically blinded to the problem that is at hand. We can resolve this thing. But the only way I can get this resolved is if I can bring people to the table of like mind. But I'm not giving up. No, by no means. I will continue to hold on to this radio network and this show as long as physically possible, as long as financially possible. And I will do it in the same method that I've been doing it all along. I throw a little crazy in there. I throw a little happy. I throw a little, you know, serious. Whatever it takes to get people's mind to thinking. When you start thinking and you start thinking outside the box and you expand the gifts of your mind as far as to your brothers and sisters out there, that's when the solutions get used. We put solution after solution on the table and they're only as good as what you're willing to do with them. You take them, you run with them, you share these podcasts. If you can take that phrase, write it on your social media network or put it on a piece of paper, stick it on a pole somewhere, or even make a t-shirt and wear it around and tell people what we're talking about here. If they take this idea and they run with it and build their own network, I'll be happy as all get out. If they take this idea and they do anything positive to this world, I will be happy as all get out. All the sacrifice that Patty and Barbara and everybody who's come on the show to take their own personal time to lobby the world to make it better, I will be happy. That's my mission in life, because I know that the benefits, I may never see when I plant that seed, that first apple off of that tree, my life expand. My life may not be long enough to actually get to taste the fruit of that, but I know that someday somebody in this world is going to get that apple, and it's going to be a life-giving nourishment, and it's going to benefit them. And that apple tree there that produces more seeds will be the future seeds. That's what we got to be if we want to make our world a better place. We got to be that seed. We got to be that positive pebble in the pond, or the spark that started the forest fire of love, or the tsunami of love, or whatever. However you want to say it. We have potential. We have great potential. We just need to choose to use it before we waste all of what we was given. And it's a shame. It's a crying shame, because when I look at this world, all I see is beauty. And when my heart speaks, it speaks only from love. That's all I got to give. And so with that, I'm giving everything I got. So, peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Mad Science Show. I hope you share this podcast with somebody. I'm going to put it up on the Auto DJ. Maybe you'll stumble on it one day. For those of you that just joining in, if you hear this a year or two down the line and we're still alive, then it ain't too late to use these solutions. That's the best I got. So, with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. I hope you join us next time around, or tonight's the round table. Get on the microphone with us. Jump in the chat room. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Can you hear me? Give my creation life!
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch